instead introduced Dr. John Minns, who is an emeritus professor of the ANU and steering committee member of RAC. So John has been tirelessly advocating for refugee rights at the grassroots level and through RAC for decades. Can't wait to hear your insights, John.
Quite some years ago now, quite a long time ago, I was asked to give a speech at a refugee rally. And I said to the people gathered there that the policies that we were there protesting about were born of political opportunism, that they were nurtured by some of the most vile and racist sentiments which Australia is capable of producing, that they existed on that day in international infamy, and that they would be remembered only with utter shame. And I'm afraid to say that years later, all of those things are true today. Political opportunism. I mean, John Howard 20 years ago clearly employed fears of Australians about people of colour, about refugees, about people coming in large numbers, fears of being swamped, fears about their jobs, fears about terrorism, and fears about Islam. He employed all of those to gain some percentage points in the polls. And he was rewarded for that. If you actually look at the polls and the way they changed, it wasn't just 9/11. The polls had swung to him well before 9/11, actually just after Tampa and before 9/11. And it's clear that that had an impact. Fast forward 20 years, and what do we see? We see the same kind of political opportunism being employed again. So the first reaction of the government, when they were asked about the roughly 5,000 Hazara refugees who are currently in Australia but do not have permanent residence, who are on temporary and very precarious visas, and who now very, very clearly cannot go back to Afghanistan, the first response, the instinctive response of the government was to say no, they would not be given permanent residents at all. 20 years ago, the defence minister at the time, Peter Reith, said that some of the refugees on the Tampa and others coming at the time could well be terrorists. With no evidence then, no evidence ever produced since, and completely illogically, when you think about how a terrorist might choose to enter the country, getting on a leaky boat might not be the best strategy for doing it. But again, what do we have today? Actually, in the last week, the current defence minister, Peter Dutton, said that some of those attempting to leave Afghanistan, even those who'd worked for the Australian Army, might have switched sides and now be supporters of Islamic State and therefore potential terrorists if they're allowed into Australia. Again, no evidence and no logic to that position at all. But it's political opportunism, and it's the same pattern to attempt to dredge a percentage point or two in the polls for an upcoming election by bashing refugees and by once again employing all of those fears and all of that racism that's inherent in it. The second thing I said was that these policies had been nurtured by racism. And I think it's hard to imagine how in a country with a history like Australia, there could not be a substratum of racism which could be employed by unscrupulous politicians. I mean, this was a country, after all, which is founded on Indigenous dispossession. It's a country where the first act of its federal parliament in 1901 was the White Australia policy. And for more than half of the history since then, that policy stayed intact. So, of course, there would be a stratum of racism to be exploited. This is a country which began the 20th century with a racist policy, and it began the 21st century with a racist policy in the Pacific Solution and the other associated elements of the refugee policy. Precisely why this kind of racism was attached to refugees particularly, and why refugees became a political football over the last 20 years, is something that I'll come to in a moment. That the policies exist in international infamy. That, I think, was very clear even 20 years ago, and it's become even more clear in the last two decades. Every organization, international organization associated with refugees or associated with human rights, pretty much has condemned Australian policies. That has only increased over time. The UNHCR, the United Nations Human Rights Committee, the Special Rapporteur on Torture, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to go right through them, but yes, international infamy. The government has been very keen to say that Australia's refugee policy is, if not the best in the world, perhaps the second best and the second most generous, that we're way up there with the best refugee policies that there are. That is obviously a ridiculous sleight of hand, because there are dozens of countries with vastly more refugees in their countries than we have. And most of those countries are much poorer countries than we are. But I want to turn that around a little, and let's compare Australia's refugee policy with the worst in the world. And when you trawl through some of the worst refugee policies in the world, you can't go much further, I think, than Viktor Orban's Hungary, certainly in relation to Europe. Viktor Orban, for those who don't know of him, is a far right, incredibly racist, incredibly xenophobic leader of Hungary. He said that he didn't view them as Muslim refugees, but as Muslim invaders. Just in the last few months, the European Court of Justice has found that Orban's refugee policy of using military and police force to prevent the entry of asylum seekers into Hungary to apply for asylum and to force them back over the border into Serbia was illegal under European law and morally reprehensible. Now, Australia has been doing that, exactly that, using the Navy since 2013. They also condemned him for having detention centres set up on the border for refugees to have to go to in order to apply for asylum. And he had to eventually get rid of those detention centres. Well, Australia has been doing that since 1992. So never mind comparing us with the best refugee policies and the worst, we don't actually come up very well when we're compared with the worst in the world. So international infamy indeed. There is an important question, I think, which I think has been already raised in the comments by Nidal that needs to be addressed, is what happened around this time that made the refugee issue so connected with dragging up all those old, someone said in the chat, I think, neo-colonialist racist ideas. I think I would identify the 1980s as a crucial turning point. I think the 1980s had two things happening simultaneously that changed the way that this argument, this discussion took place. One was that it was clearly the end of post-war prosperity. There'd been two recessions. By the 1980s, we had the highest unemployment since the 1930s, since the Great Depression. There were all sorts of changes structurally in companies and in government departments, casualization, outsourcing, all sorts of things that meant that the idea of a job for life was gone. There were also government changes in policy. A neoliberal policy started to make people less secure. All sorts of elements of the social security network, the safety network, were pulled away. And for the first time in the 1980s ever in Australia, since the questions were asked, people, when asked the question of whether their kids' lives would be better than their own, said no. So there's a deep economic insecurity happening. And the second factor is that there's also a deep demographic and cultural shift happening, because white Australia was formally in place until 1966. It didn't really end until the 1970s. And then we began to get in the immigration intake, a large immigration intake, more and more people from non-European backgrounds, particularly from Asia and to a lesser extent the Middle East. The combination of those two things, deep economic change and insecurity and deep cultural insecurity amongst white Australia, produced an explosive mixture which unscrupulous politicians could easily utilise. And In 1988, I mean, there are a number of people who were involved in that, who were saying Australia was being Asianized against our will, that elites were bringing Asians into the country against the interests of ordinary people. But in 1988, John Howard, then the opposition leader, decided to dip his toe into that water and said, yes, Asian immigration was going too fast and should be slowed down. He legitimized that argument to a certain extent. But what he didn't expect was the reaction from business, which hated it, absolutely slammed him. And it's one of the reasons he lost the Liberal Party leadership for a time in 88. And the reason was that he had attacked two fundamental pillars of the way Australian society and the Australian economy was developing. Business always wants higher immigration levels. It constitutes about half our GDP growth. And also by the 1980s, it was absolutely apparent that the orientation of the Australian economy was going to be towards Asia. That was irrevocable by that point. So politicians in the mainstream learned a lesson. They learned that you couldn't openly, at least, attack large-scale immigration, and you couldn't attack Asian immigration in particular. But within a few years, we had mandatory detention of asylum seekers and a handful of asylum seekers, 200 or 300 coming from Cambodia. Suddenly there was barbed wire going up and there was no reaction from business. There was no negative consequence. You could play with the issue of asylum seekers and refugees, and you could call up from the proverbial vasty deep those racist sentiments, and you could try to profit electorally and politically from it without the economic and political consequences that followed earlier by attacking Asian immigrants. And since then, as a result, refugees have become an opportunity to win votes, attacking them, that is. And so we've had three elections, federal elections, in which refugees, astonishingly, have been one of the top three, or in one case, four issues in those elections, 2001, 2010, and 2013. That is extraordinary. And that is where I think it came from. And the final point, really, that I want to make, and I said at the beginning, that I thought these policies would be remembered only with utter shame. It wasn't much of a prediction, to be honest, when I made it, because many millions of Australians, even then, viewed those policies with utter shame. But the number of Australians thinking that has actually increased. It depends on the question you ask people. But if you say, should indefinite detention continue for the people who've been detained for 8 years, a clear majority of Australians say no. If you ask, should offshore detention continue indefinitely, clear majority say no. If you ask, should kids ever be in detention, majority say no. If you ask, should people be brought to Australia for medical treatment, clear majority say no. Not on every question, but on those questions, it's clear that the utter shame felt by millions has increased. For those of us who've been involved in this campaign for a long time, we wouldn't be human if we didn't ask ourselves every now and then, has it been worth it? And I'd like to phrase it like this. The utter shame that we today feel about these policies, that our country carries out this inhumanity and cruelty towards people asking for our help, would be much greater. We would feel much greater shame if there'd been no resistance to them. Then we would have to be ashamed not only of our government, but of ourselves. And so we are the resistance, along with the refugees themselves who've been fighting inside detention for many years. We are the resistance to those things.